welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. On Friday, a 20-year-old man opened fire in a Connecticut elementary school, killing 20 first graders and six adults. He also murdered his mother and took his own life. At a memorial last night, President Obama said, "We will have to change." So do you agree with the president that we need to change to make sure that a tragedy like this never occurs again? How do we change? With both violent crime and gun ownership in long-term decline, is this horrific crime a sign of something larger or an aberration? Let's hear from the president.
Can we honestly say that we're doing enough to keep our children, all of them, safe from harm? Can we claim as a nation that we're all together there, letting them know that they're loved and teaching them to love in return? Can we say that we're truly doing enough to give all the children of this country the chance they deserve to live out their lives in happiness and with purpose?
And that's a big question. So what are the hard questions that we need to be asking, and what change can we make? We're joined by Clara Jeffrey, co-editor of Mother Jones magazine, and she co-authored the article, No More New Towns, What Will It Take? And we'll ask that question and invite your answers. You can call us. We have open lines at 866-798-8255. Again, that number is toll-free, 866-798-8255. And Clara, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Holly.
So before we get to your question, No More New Towns, What Will It Take? You also, Mother Jones, put together a guide to mass shootings in America, and you write that since 1982, there have been at least 62 mass murders carried out with firearms across the country, with the killings unfolding in 30 states from Massachusetts to Hawaii. I wonder if you could sketch out what's been happening with mass murders over the past three decades.
Well, basically, we've just seen it on a huge incline. You know, there have been 140 casualties this year to mass shootings. I hate to say so far, but that's the case.
Yeah.
And you know, even that's almost twice as many as in the years when Columbine occurred or when Virginia Tech occurred. So you know, and it's been, as we know, it's been Sandy Hook, it's been Aurora, it's been the Sikh Temple. I mean, There have just been so many, and so many mass shootings this year in particular with such a large casualty count.
And when you did your investigation, you found of the 142 guns possessed by killers, more than three quarters were obtained legally.
That's right. I mean, which, you know, speaks to what got guns we allow to be bought in this country. But this is not, generally speaking, people, you know, somehow obtaining a gun illegally. So they buy it through gun stores or through gun shows or the usual routes that happens.
Which was the case with Nancy Lanza, Adam Lanza's mother, as I understand it, in the Connecticut case.
Yeah, it appears that at least her handguns were purchased at local gun stores, I believe. You know, the assault rifle, it's a little more unclear. There's been conflicting reports, not so much that she would have purchased it illegally, but Connecticut does have an assault weapons ban. So whether or not it fell within the strictures of that law is still being reported out, I believe.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and on the line with me is Clara Jeffrey, who's co-editor of Mother Jones magazine, and they put together this guide to mass shootings in America. One of the things that you say is 45 of the killers were white males. Only one of them was a woman. Is there a profile of a mass murderer in the United States?
Well, it tends to be young white males. They tend to be, you know, in their early 20s to mid 30s. You know, there's some evidence more broadly, beyond just mass shootings, that that people who become violently schizophrenic and have similar psychosis, that the age of onset is in the early 20s. So that probably is a participating factor in many of these cases, but not all of them. And you know, other than that, they differ in the particulars. I think when journalists and others try and go deep into prescribing the motives for something that's this insane and horrific, it, to some extent, it sort of eats up the bandwidth of things that should be discussed instead.
So one of the things that we want to discuss is what changes should we make, if any. President Obama called for change last night. We have full lines, but I want to let you know that we are opening up the lines. This is an hour to hear from you. What changes would you like to see? Can this tragedy be translated into actual policy action change? 866-798-8255. Again, the lines are full, but when there's an opening, it's 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment at yourcallradio.org, and we'll have links to the Mother Jones articles there. And you can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Before we take calls, Clara, what do you think we should do? You put together this No More Newtowns. What will it take?
I mean, I think there are all sorts of specific legal remedies that could help. But what I think it really takes is a broader cultural shift, and probably a group of people, perhaps it's parents, perhaps, you know, arm in arm with responsible gun owners, who basically become the public face of this and say, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to show you by example. We're going to shame you. We're going to end the dynamic where any discussion of how to better legislate guns is deemed un-American by the NRA and its allies. I think it really takes ordinary people speaking out, speaking publicly, and probably with, you know, some particular people coming to the fore.
Well, and a lot of times after a tragedy like this, there's a lot of discussion, and then just a few weeks later, it dies down, and the NRA's voice is raised, and the lobbyists come out, and nothing happens.
Yeah, that's been true, and we'll see if that happens again. I mean, I think that this year the bloodshed has been so high, and I also think that the NRA may be more vulnerable than people think. They spent a lot of money in this last election and got a very poor return on investment in terms of the candidates they got elected.
Your article says the NRA spent nearly $11 million in the November election. Only six of the candidates it backed, a total of 1% won. So do you think
that's
that
right.
The NRA's political power is waning?
Well, I don't know if it's what it may have done is just basically relocated to working on the state legislatures to pass all these concealed carry, stand your ground, and other laws that basically loosen any restrictions or background checks or that kind of thing. And the way they do this is by, you know, ginning up people's fear. It's not more Americans who are buying guns. It's those Americans who buy guns buying more guns. Feeling that they, you know, have to arm themselves in a bunker. And that kind of mentality is just perpetuated by people who are trying to make money off it. I mean, you know, there was this really great article on Deadspin by a sports broadcaster who had done a lot of, sports shooting events and had been with NRA officials many, many times over the years. And it's like, these guys just are in it for the money. I mean, they don't believe necessarily the fraud that they put forward. They're running a business.
And that's Clara Jeffrey. She's co-editor of Mother Jones Magazine. You're listening to Your Call. We're doing open lines today to talk about the mass shootings in Newtown, Connecticut. And let's go to Hiram in Sunnyvale. Hi, Hiram.
Hi. One thing that it's not been really stated, obviously there is a lot of talk about, you know, how we can change legislation and all this other thing. But, you know, the one area that's not really talked about is how do you limit the liability, right? I mean, people talk about, you know, we should get people to register and have insurance and all the rest of it, or we should have the government intervene. But I think that there's another possibility, which is Congress should just open up the floodgates and say, you know, there's unlimited liability for the manufacturers. And when that happens, you know, if a gun is used in a crime and there's unlimited liability, then the manufacturers very quickly figure out what needs to be done. You know, we're not making the government in charge of it. We're not taking away people's arms. But when the manufacturer is put on the hook, something is going to happen.
And how do you think that might happen, either Hiram or Clara?
Well, I mean, President George Bush did pass, get kind of help push through a law to limit the liability or eliminate the liability. But those laws could be changed. There's been other efforts you know, Mayor Bloomberg tried to get some legislation passed that would have basically looked at when gun manufacturers were being so reckless through their sales as to be deemed traffickers. You know, there are legal strategies that could be pursued.
Well, and one of the things that there's a loophole that at gun shows, they don't have to do a background check if it's considered a private purchase, right?
Right. I mean, that's an obvious loophole to close. I mean, some of the things that are really basic and seem like, you know, any sane society would do them, a waiting period. I mean, if you feel, you know, if you're angry and you want a gun, cool off. And if you feel your life is in danger, call the police. That's what they're there for. You know, having people be forced to wait a few days between applying for a gun and getting one is a huge would be a huge step.
Although in this case, in Newtown, Connecticut, or in the case of the Colorado shooting, none of that would have made a difference.
Well, in this case, we don't really know so much what would have made a difference. The guns were clearly in the house. We don't know how they were secured or, you know, under what circumstances they were purchased exactly. You know, in Colorado, I believe he bought some of them online, or at least much of the ammunition online. I mean, these, again...
Legally, though.
Legally, sure. But legally, as per the laws that exist now. I mean, if you pass a law restricting online sales or ammunition sales, then it would no longer be legal.
And somebody says, my question is, why isn't there a mass movement or something more organized by citizen groups and activists and ordinary people to change the conversation in this country, something like the Occupy movement? And that seems to be what you're calling for, Clara.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you know, there have been tens and tens of thousands of people have signed an online petition to the White House. There have been, you know, record kind of participation of people coming forward at, you know, pre-scheduled gun buyback programs and turning in weapons saying, I just can't have this in my house, given what's happened. I think it's all those things and more. It could be as broad and kind of leaderless as Occupy, or maybe it needs, you know, a person or persons to sort of rally behind.
And you know, mentioned maybe
sort of
mothers.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving model. Exactly.
Yeah. That's Claire Jeffrey. She's co-editor of Mother Jones Magazine. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we have open lines to talk about President Obama's call for change and what that means, what does need to change, what would really make a difference. Is it about regulating guns? Is it about providing better mental health care? If you're a teacher, a mental health care professional, or someone who works in law enforcement, what do you think? You can join our conversation at 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you're a member of the NRA, what do you think sensible gun laws should look like? 866-798-8255. And let's go to Esme in San Francisco. Hi, Esme.
Hi. Thank you very much for your show. I think that the focus is really is not accurate. Of the 50 school shootings that have happened since 1996, they were committed by children between the ages of 11 and 17. And after extensive research on my own, on the internet, after seeing what is the connection with these kids, they are all on pharmaceutical drugs. They are all on Ritalin, Prozac, Celexa, Luvox, combinations of the two. There is not one of these shootings from Columbine on, Effexor, boys are being completely neglected in this country. They are left to the most hideous, violent video games, and all of these boys were loners that were addicted to video games, that were on drugs and had guns in the house. And that is a huge thing that isn't being looked at all. And there's even a weirder component that I'm just going to, because all the news isn't in, but the very strange thing is that the father of Adam Lanza, Peter Lanza, was the VP of financial of GE, and the father of James Holmes, who was the Aurora shooter, his father, Robert Holmes, was the chief financial scientist of FICA, and both of them were in were up for the, both of them were to testify in the LIBOR scandal. They were both up to their necks in the LIBOR scandal. The mother of Adam Lanza.
I don't think it's helpful to the debate to kind of spin out conspiracy theories about these men. You know, it's clear that better mental health care in many or all of these cases would have, you know, had a chance at preventing these individual incidents. You know, we have essentially more access to weapons and less mental health care. I mean, I think in some cases the problem was not so much medication as people who had gone off medication. But in any case, it's clear that, you know, we have people who are mentally ill, who maybe their families have sought support and haven't gotten enough of it. Maybe nobody's sought support. Maybe there's no adequate kind of warning system in schools and other places to sort of figure out who is this troubled and try and do something about it. You know, I think people need to speak up about that kind of thing, and people need, and our society has to, you know, help these young men. And that is clear too. I mean, it's a two-part problem. One in part is mental health care, and the other part is access to an unbelievable arsenal.
And that's Claire Jeffrey of Mother Jones Magazine. The other thing that she brought, Esme brought up, was media and the culture of violent video games and violence in films and, you know, the 24-hour news cycle. What do you think the sort of media angle on this is? Is there some culpability in media and in terms of sort of the violence, the level of violence that there is in video games and movies, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, I mean, the data on that is really unclear. I think, you know, probably just as a matter of common sense, it is not a good idea for anyone to sit around playing hours and hours of violent or other video games. You know, it is not the healthiest thing you can do in terms of, you know, where your mind is at and just how you spend your time. I think for most people, it just, you know, means you'll gain some weight and not, you know, not do things that are better for you. But for some people who, you know, are mentally ill, it could increase the kind of fantasy realm of certain forms of psychosis. But I think in general, you know, it's not like this number of video games, you know, has a clear output to this number of incidents.
Although it does seem to desensitize us to the actual effects of violence.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does, as does, you know, primetime television and other things. But, you know, I think, again, that's kind of sensible consumption within a household.
Okay, let's go to Catherine in Sebastopol. Welcome to your call, Catherine.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to agree with the earlier caller about prescription drugs. I would personally not like to give up my freedom to have a gun. I would like to see prescription drugs looked at in more severity. These are mind mood-altering drugs. These kids have been promoted to be on children. They're very powerful. They alter the state of mind to think of suicidal thoughts. Very documented. And these guys are in concoctions of them. And they get armed, and they're dangerous. To lose the freedom to have guns, very serious personal freedom. Why? Mother Jones would allow such a personal freedom to be lost.
So let's put that to Clara. She's saying that the right to have a gun is a personal freedom should it be lost because you have a mental illness.
If you have a mental illness?
Right.
I mean, I think that if you have a mental illness, we could at the very least do a better job of keeping guns out of the hands of people who are mentally ill. You know, it just stands to reason. And, again, that's something an overwhelming majority of Americans support, but the NRA has fought back against, you know, and I don't think it would be, oh, I've had some mild depression 20 years ago. I, you know, under current law, would never be able to get a gun. But I think as a first step, we could try and make sure that people who are not, you know, in active treatment for some very real psychosis can't get a license to have a gun.
So, Clara, I don't know how long you can stay with us. We're going to go to a break in just a couple of minutes, but I wanted to ask you, what do you see as the conversation that's happening on Capitol Hill in Congress as the conversation around real possible change around these issues of gun laws and mental health?
Well, I think it's really interesting, and this news has just come out today, that that a Republican congressman who is, you know, kind of a darling of the NRA, Joe Manchin, I believe his name is pronounced, you know, has said that everything
West Virginia senator.
Yeah, and West Virginia, you know, that everything has to be on the table. I mean, we heard Rupert Murdoch call for an assault weapons ban. I feel that's somewhat hypocritical given some of the coverage that happens on Fox News. But I believe that, again, a lot of this change will have to come from responsible gun owners.
And let me just add one.
People don't want the blood, this blood on their hands. You know, the NRA's membership is 4 million people. It's not that many people in terms of the overall population of the country, but its executive board is way more rabid on these issues than its, you know, rank and file membership.
And but it spends a lot of money on that rank and on the people in Congress. Representative John Yarmuth, I think it is, a Democrat from Kentucky, held a news conference to say he backed new gun legislation. And he said, I've been largely silent on the issue of gun violence over the past 6 years. And now I am as sorry for that as I am to what happened to the families who lost so much in this recent but sadly not isolated tragedy. And he says the National Rifle Association has spent untold millions of dollars instilling fear in our citizens and our politicians. So, Claire, we just have like a minute before the break if you want to have final thoughts, or do you think you can stay with us and take some more calls?
Sure, I could take a few more calls.
That would be great. So what else is being proposed on Capitol Hill? Feinstein is saying the assault weapon ban, restore that, gun show background checks.
Yeah, I think we'll hear the restoration of things that used to be and perhaps an expansion of some of those. So assault weapons ban would be one. You know, getting rid of the gun show loophole would be another. I think kind of tightening up of existing regulations. Past that, I think, you know, how creative can either Congress or the president get? I mean, what can the president do as an executive order with or without congressional support? I mean, this is all evolving so quickly, I don't think we quite know yet. But there's certainly any number of bills that could be introduced. There's also, you know, kind of court challenges that could be taken. You know, in the past, like I said, Mayor Bloomberg tried to, you know, sue the gun manufacturers for trafficking, essentially. The mayors and other entities could try other suits against gun manufacturers and others.
So go at it from all angles, legal, congressional, even executive order.
Yes, I think all that has to be done, but I think the most important change and what's going to put wind at the back of any of that is a cultural change for people to stand up.
And that's what we're going to continue to talk about, Clara. I'm sorry to cut you off. We need to go to a break. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that depends on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. Open lines for the rest of the hour at 866-798-8255. Or please post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you will also find links related to today's program. And that's where you can sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter as well. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
Thank you. For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about the rise of the Asian consumer. Consumers in India and China are expected to spend nearly $10 trillion on goods and services by 2020. So what does that mean for the global economy? On Wednesday, we'll talk about the best books of the year and compile our annual book list. And if you have a show idea for us, you can send us a line to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're talking about the tragic mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, and President Obama's call for change. So what will it really take? We're speaking with Clara Jeffrey of Mother Jones Magazine. And Clara, I'm sorry, you were talking about needing a cultural change right before we went to the break, and I needed to cut you off. So please talk about that.
I think it's people basically standing up to this notion that to discuss that it's either futile to discuss change, or that to talk about any kind of reasonable gun control is somehow anti-American. In terms of the futility, there have been other things that have seemed horribly intractable in our society. You know, slavery, Jim Crow. The disenfranchisement of women and minorities, child labor, all of those things seemed intractable, and all of them were defeated, basically at its beginning by a group of committed people struggling to make the issue public. And then, it broadened out through society and by those people standing up, sometimes in the case of physical as well as verbal threats, they change society. That can happen again. And when people say, oh, there's, 300 million guns, we'll never get rid of them all. Well, again, those guns are concentrated amongst certain households. And, I'm not suggesting that we bang down the doors to get them. But if you started restricting ownership and restricting usage and restricting the ammunition, you could, over the years through both attrition and a cultural shift, just change it so people – so it wouldn't be cool to have a gun, basically.
Let's go to, we've got full callers who want to talk with you about this, Clara. Roberta in San Francisco, welcome to your call, Roberta.
This is Roberta. Thank
you. Hi, Roberta.
I'm in agreement with everything that's been said about improved mental health services and the ban on assault rifles, et cetera. But I'd like to see an even broader cultural shift. I'd like to see us look at our response to situations abroad where we respond in a war-like fashion. We use violence in Afghanistan. We use violence. Look at Iraq. What are we doing as a society to counter this and not have this cultural violence really permeate our society? I think that there needs to be talk, bold talk by President Obama at this point as to pulling the troops back now and saying, we realize that this is violence in Afghanistan is not getting us where we need to be, nor getting the Afghani people where they need to be. Let's pull back and let's put in some humanitarian aid and show some really broad strokes in terms of our response to violence. I realize that that's really a broad cultural shift, but that in addition to all the kinds of things that you're talking about, the ban on assault rifles and improved mental health, might be able to begin some kind of a dialogue amongst our citizenry that will meet some different ends. I'd be curious to hear what you have to say about that, Clara.
Well, you could approach that from so many angles, but suffice it to say that, I think that if you can't attack that kind of the violence in your own society, then when it comes to sort of the wars that we participate in abroad, in some ways, so much attention has focused on that in our country in the last 10 years. And I think
on the wars abroad, you're saying?
Yeah, the wars abroad. And I think also, again, gun manufacturers and gun rights groups kind of scared, ordinary people and, rural towns across America to think they had to, arm themselves against, invading terrorists, which is just pretty ridiculous, really, on the face of it. I think that the wars abroad helped our society be okay with more guns at home. It sort of came at a time, too, it put an end to a discussion that seemed evolving about, you know, responsible gun laws and gun ownership. But basically, I think it's this ginning up of fear that's been going on. And, you know, people are making money off that fear, not just guns, but other stuff. You know, this whole kind of prepper industry is selling people on, you know, various forms of apocalypse. But there's always something to sell.
That's Clara Jeffrey. She's the co-editor of Mother Jones Magazine, and she wrote No More New Towns, What Will It Take? We've got a link to that at yourcallradio.org. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and let's go to Jason in Salinas.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, great. I'm actually an educator in higher ed, a little over 10 years as that is my career, and I've served on two different safety committees in two different institutions, and this has been a hot-button topic, particularly after the Virginia Tech shootings. And one of the things both sets of committees at two different institutions came to in an academic discussion is that sometimes prevention does seem a little futile in the sense that there is not a formula for the type of person that would commit these types of acts. And both committees decided that the focus should be on response and on campus prevention as much as possible in terms of safety officers. And so my question is, has there been any talk on the table to make in our elementaries, in our junior highs, in our high schools, the position of somebody that's an armed safety security type officer, a position just like you would have a principal, just like you would have teachers, and that becoming part of a regular budget cycle for public schools to consider?
Clara, do you know anything about that?
No, I don't know any specifics about that. You know, I think that schools are a good way to teach kids basic moral values, and that the more we can incorporate that into, you know, curriculum specifically or just the ethos of the school, that's all to the good. I mean, schools can also be a good way to kind of catch things that are going awry with a child or with their home.
Like you said, a warning system.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there's a lot of barriers to that, including the fact that we're cutting so much from the schools that, you know, there are no more school counselors and teachers are, you know, overseeing 35 kids in the class and just trying to keep order, you know, much less screen, you know, kind of really keep an eye on emerging psychiatric issues. So I think schools, you know, better partnership with schools. I mean, look, these teachers and that principal, you know, gave their life trying to save those kids. And I think if we do a better job of respecting the job that educators do, you know, our kids will be safer.
Well, and you just brought up a really big issue, which is our cutbacks to education. President Obama said, can we honestly say we're doing enough to keep our children, all of them, safe from harm? Can we as a nation claim that we're all together here, letting them know that they're loved and teaching them to love in return? And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking about, you know, the appalling levels of child poverty that we have in this country. And that's obviously not what the president is referring to or what people are talking about right now. But I wonder if that's part of a larger conversation around protecting children.
Sure, and I mean we're focused on this one kind of gun atrocity, but there are others. There are neighborhoods that are under siege, not from mass shootings, but from, you know, just kind of more gang violence and that kind of a thing.
And gripping poverty and unemployment.
Yeah, I mean, that's all caught up together. You know, I think it's all part of the solution. I think that if we put the interests of our children first, you know, we'll be a better society. I mean, that just seems pretty obvious. And this is, I think the president talking about how we're failing to do that is a good first step on many fronts.
And that's Clara Jeffrey, Mother Jones Magazine. And Mother Jones put out a guide to mass shootings in America. Jason brought up the elementary school or schools. And in when you looked at these workplace killings, it says half of the cases involved school or workplace shootings, 12 schools, 19 workplaces. So half were schools or workplace shootings. Just wanted to get that statistic out there. All of that information from Mother Jones will be at yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex.
Hi, thank you. There is this false notion going around that people kill people, not guns. I think that's the stupidest thing I hear all the time. if this guy did not have all that array of weapons, he could not have been as dangerous as he turned out to be. There is no place, I don't see why there are gun stores in the first place. The only people who should be, you know, allowed to deal with weapons should be law enforcement and maybe even the military. I don't even think the military should have any weapons because see what it has done for the world. So I think this whole idea of guns and being people's rights is just the stupidest, the sickest thing, which reflects the sick society that the United States is. Is the most violent country in the world.
I don't know if that's actually true, Alex.
It is. It is. Who is supplying Mexico with all this weapon? Who is buying the drugs? Who is protecting? I mean, you know. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. Alex brings up a question that another listener asked, which is, do we need to look at the Second Amendment? And I wonder what you think about that. Or are there misconceptions that we have kind of commonly about the Second Amendment, Clara?
Well, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but as I understand it, part of it is just that we basically have not had a test case get to the Supreme Court on what a regulated militia means in this day and age, or even what the framers meant it to mean, you know, 1776 or shortly thereafter when they wrote the Constitution. So, you know, I think that there could be court cases that rise to address that and bring it before the court. There's, of course, it is the possibility of a constitutional amendment. It's been a long time since we've done one, but it's possible. You know, I think these other steps would have to happen first, and this cultural shift and this engagement in the issue and this willingness for people to not just think that this is hopeless and that they can't do anything and that the NRA has, you know, has won and will always win and just, you know,
and has a stranglehold
cynical
somehow
in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Eric in Santa Cruz. Hi, Eric. Welcome to your call.
Hi, how's it going?
Thanks for joining us.
I've been listening here for about 20 minutes now, and I just wanted to comment on what some of the other callers are talking about. I just recently got out of the Marine Corps on October 25th. I did a tour in Afghanistan.
Welcome home.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't own a gun. I don't plan on owning any guns. I was in the infantry. I was a machine gunner. Sending humanitarian aid to Afghanistan is not going to stop anything that's going on over there. So, you know, pulling the troops out is probably not the best course of action right now. The Taliban will not differentiate between a soldier, a Marine, or someone who's there to build a school or, you know, pass out food. They don't care about that. So I just want to hit on that real quick. The other thing is when it comes to gun control, the issue with the video games and the way society looks at, you know, how cool guns are, what Claire was saying. The video games nowadays make it seem that, you know, there's video games where you can, the whole point of the game is to walk around and pull people out of the vehicle and shoot them.
Right.
And it's just ridiculous. I'm only 25 years old, and you'd think that the people who have been around for 40 or 50 years on this earth would have figured out by now that that's not the best way to look at things. But another thing when it comes to gun control, I think that, you know, obviously there's a 10-day waiting period in California, and you have to have, you're supposed to have, you know, register your gun and whatnot. But how come there's no system in where every 6 months or annually you have to, you know, recheck up or prove that you still have ownership of a gun? There's, you know, something like that would definitely, I think, help out a lot. So I don't know what Claire has to say about something like that. But.
Yeah, it's interesting. Those are all excellent points. I mean, we regulate just about everything better than we regulate guns. And a gun license, you know, why not have people do some kind of annual checkup, if only to, you know, discover that a gun might have gone missing in their house. That's something I'm sure that they would want to know. You know, we could do much better just requirements around training before you get a license, you know, in terms of both using the weapon, but more importantly, how to store it. You know, what is a safe way to do it? I mean, you're so much more, if you have a gun in your house, it's so much more likely that either you or someone in your house will be killed by it than killed by a gun than people who don't have guns in their house, because they're there and because accidents happen, or, you know, people get depressed and use a gun because it's right there. You know, just educating people about all of that. I mean, some basic safety and training would be great.
In the same way that we do with a driver's license, for example, that you have to renew, and that if there's something wrong with your vision, et cetera, you can't drive a car.
Exactly.
That's Clara Jeffrey. She's a co-editor of Mother Jones Magazine. And Clara, I know that you might need to leave us. We have about 10 minutes left and a full bank of callers. Do you need to go?
No, I'm good.
Thank you. Let's go to Rebecca in Oakland. Welcome to your call, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the show, and Claire, thank you for the article. I haven't read it, but I'm definitely going to look it up. So my brother is a colonel in the United States Army Reserve, and he has actually drafted legislation that he has entitled the Responsible Gun Owners Act. And I was reviewing it and reading it and editing it. I'm a lawyer, so I kind of added the legalese language to it. It seems like a couple of things. One is I'm an ordinary person, and I'm very willing to do the work and to put in the energy that is required to get something like this taken seriously by our legislatures and congresspeople. It would be good to kind of be guided in how, where to go to start doing that, and who to work with.
Well, stay on the line with us, Rebecca, because we want to make sure that we can get a link to the Responsible Gun Owners Act and put it at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. So stay on the line, but let's hear from Clara.
Okay.
How would she go about doing this?
I'm sorry, I missed part of the call dropped out for me for a second, so I'm in this part of what
you're
saying.
She's wondering about this whole idea of starting a movement. She's gone through and they've put together this Responsible Gun Owners Act that we'll try and get a link to. Rebecca, are you still with us? You still there? She's gone. All right, well, we'll try and get a link to that. But essentially she's saying, well, what do I do? Okay, I'm somebody who does want to start this movement. What do you think are the steps?
Well, I mean, she was talking about her brother who's started drafting this. And I really believe that a big component of this is gun owners stepping forward and speaking out. So whether that's, you know, taking to Facebook or finding other gun owners that feel the same, and then basically drumming up publicity for their movement, and, you know, trying to have public events and public meetings, and, you know, perhaps go to those NRA meetings and talk, you know. I mean, I think there's also a sort of people within the NRA could bring that group to heel, to where the actual membership is on gun safety issues, which is, you know, they're far more in favor of at least some basic regulations than the executives leading it. So they're having gun owners who are either members of the NRA or not kind of step forward and say what they think should happen and how they, you know, what they believe responsibility should and could look like.
And if you are a member of the NRA or a gun owner and you want to put your comment at yourcallradio.org, we're happy to host the conversation there. We have full lines, so let's go to another caller. Ren in Santa Cruz, welcome to your call. Hello. Hi, Ren. Ren, you're on. So I think we lost Ren. Ren, are you there? How about Cynthia? Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to your call.
Thank you so much. I wanted to get back to the Second Amendment again, because it's such, you know, the bulwark for the gun rights movement. And you know, I think tackling, as you mentioned earlier, what does it mean to have a well-regulated militia? What does it mean a well-regulated militia in order to preserve a free state? You know, I think scholarship around that, emphasis on that, I think is a really good way forward. You know, gun proponents are often saying, oh, you know, look at Switzerland. They have a very high gun ownership rate, but it's within a very responsible, serving of society way. They're actually in, they're in militias. They're in, like a National Guard. Mm. It's not individuals you know, who are not connected with each other, that don't have responsibility to each other, that don't have social cohesion. And I think that would be a really good way forward.
Well, Cynthia, thank you for that. And I'm wondering, Clara, if you have other examples internationally of responsible gun ownership or of the banning of guns.
Well, I think, you know, the UK is a good example. I mean, they have long had more restrictions than us, but I believe it was in, not that long ago, about a decade ago, they had a horrible school shooting in Dunblane, Scotland, and, you know, in kind of quick succession, they banned automatic weapons, they banned or greatly restricted ammunition, and you know, I believe it's essentially these days that you can own a gun, but you either by law or by culture, if you use it, it's kind of at the gun club where you leave it. That is one way. Australia also had a sort of similar situation where it had a horrible mass murder and quickly restricted, you know, as Rupert Murdoch has said, quickly restricted assault weapons and other components within the gun universe. So, you know, I think most of Europe has very restrictive gun laws, and they, as a result, don't have very many, if any, gun homicides. I mean, you know, there's still crazed people that can get a hold of guns, as we saw in Norway. As we saw in Germany about a decade before that. These things can and will happen, but they would happen less often.
Let me try and get as many callers as we can, because we just have a couple minutes left. Let's go to Paula from Berkeley. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I had heard some reference online about proposing insurance for gun owners, as a
in the same way
weapon.
The car,
Yeah, and I'm just wondering if you've, you know, if anybody's talked about that or
the proposal
what the
for,
discussion is.
Proposal for insurance for...
Yeah, like if you purchase a weapon, you need to have insurance.
That's interesting.
It, for accidental or... probably not purposeful use, but for accidental death or something
like
that.
Well, this again goes to the liability issue in part, right? So part of the stand your ground laws, not in every case, but one big component of most of the stand your ground laws that have been passed is a waiver of liability. So if as long as I state that you threatened me, not necessarily with a weapon even, but that I felt threatened, and I shoot and kill you, in the laws written in many of these states now that there's not only no criminal component, but that civil liability is waived as well. So, again, I think that these are laws that can be rolled back,
But they have been proliferating at the state level.
They have been proliferating at the state level. I mean, thanks basically to the NRA. Gun Owners of America and ALEC, the American Legislative Executive Council.
And let's try and get a couple more calls in. Troy in Santa Cruz, if you could be brief. We're running out of time.
Yes, real brief. As a former high school biology teacher at Crenshaw High in South Central LA, and also having my mother and grandmother terrorized at a home invasion robbery a couple years ago, I'm all about assault rifles. I think one of the unique things that we have in this country that not a lot of people are talking about is gang violence. I don't see the gangs in Europe. I don't see the gangs in Australia. And, you know, one other thing to note about Europe and gun control, maybe they don't deserve guns. I mean, World War I and World War II were started and for a large part fought in Europe. So the Europeans not having guns, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. So
stay on the line for 1 second, Troy. So what you're saying is you believe that Americans should possess assault weapons for self-defense purposes?
I believe you should be able to defend your home and property, but to do it with overwhelming force. If you look at the statistics with even police officers who are professionally trained and get down to the rifle range on a regular basis, or at least are supposed to, their accuracy rate's really low when they're under stress. So, you know, if you have a householder who's trying to defend themselves from a couple of people, or in the case of my mother's experience, four people breaking in and them not being able to do a darn thing, more than having more than 10 rounds in a clip, I think is a good thing.
All right. Troy, I'm going to break into that. Thank you very much for your call. And, Clara, we just have about a minute and a half left. I want to get your final thoughts in response to Troy.
I mean, you know, I think when people feel powerless, in some cases, guns make them feel better. There's not a whole lot of evidence that, you know, even possessing assault weapons in a situation like that help. You have to get to the gun, you know, I mean, all of that. But I understand that, you know, that his mom and his family is living in fear. I think those neighborhoods would be not as stricken with fear if the people invading the homes didn't have guns and assault weapons themselves. So, you know, it's one of these kind of chicken and the egg thing. But to get this strain of violence out of our society, you have to begin somewhere.
And so you've said, let's begin with this cultural shift. So just in the last 30 seconds here, what are you urging listeners to do?
I'm urging listeners to be public about it, to actively participate, and, you know, in things as little as posting on Facebook and telling people what they think, but more importantly, joining groups that are trying to do something, speaking out, putting pressure on their representatives and senators, and, you know, basically shaming people when they participate in this this cycle
of fear.
Fear and you know, donations to the NRA.
And that's Clara Jeffrey. She is the co-editor of Mother Jones magazine and the author of No More New Towns, What Will It Take? We'll have a link to all of that information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Clara.
Thank you.
And I'm so sorry that we couldn't get to everybody's calls. You can continue the conversation online at yourcallradio.org. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. Who are the emerging global consumers? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the rise in consumer spending in China and India. By 2020, consumer spending in China and India is expected to reach $10 trillion a year. So who are these new consumers, and how are they changing their societies? Join us live at 10 or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. How is the rise in consumer spending impacting the economic growth in the global economy? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. We believe that telling the story of a city means telling the stories of the people who live there. That's what our community storytelling project, Hear Here, has been doing in San Francisco and Oakland. And now we want to understand the places that make these cities what they are. So we're asking a simple question. What's a place in your neighborhood that means something to you, and why? Think about it. What's your spot? It could be a place no one knows is special but you. Submit your story using our brand new recording app on the Hear Here website. That's hearhere.kalw.org. While you're there, check out our sound map of the Bay Area. It's filled with stories from people near you. So go share your spot at hearhere.kalw.org. That's hearhere.kalw.org.
Hello, welcome to World Have Your Say. I'm Jill McGivering. What do you think of America's relationship with guns?
It's a matter of people killing people, not guns killing people. If it wasn't guns, it would be something else. When the mind comes unhinged, you know, there's really no cure or fix for that.
Today, the first funerals are taking place of those killed in Friday's school shootings in Newtown, Connecticut. President Obama promised to use the power of his office to prevent further attacks, but he hasn't talked about tighter gun controls or about reducing the number of guns. About 300 million guns are privately owned in the U.S. The right to bear arms is of great importance to most Americans and enshrined in the Constitution. There's little public support for moves to curb that right. So we're asking, what do you think about America's relationship with guns? call us on country code 44 20 31 62 42 42.